Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star two if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment please while we poll for questions.
And Manny, just so you know, I think Lori's having some trouble reaching you in the sub room.
Yeah, we do have one question in queue. It comes from the line of Marie Namay from Cleveland, Ohio. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Trish, for a very comprehensive review of cognitive function and dysfunction. The dilemma I always have with patients who seem to be cognitively impaired is the challenge when they want to continue to drive. And they particularly don't have insight into their deficits. And they often come to the follow-up appointment alone. Do you have any tips on how you handle this particular situation?
Well, that's a very good one, Marie, and that is very challenging. Typically, what I try to get persons to look at is how well they may or may not be driving, and I know that you feel like you can drive, so why don't we help you get an insurance break? I'm sure you're paying high premiums for your health care insurance. So I provide them a resource for driver testing that is accepted by, we use the Senior Resource Alliance, which is accepted by most of our insurers down here. If persons pass those tests, then they may be able to get a discount on their insurances. So I typically try to motivate persons in that way. But it is a very difficult. And the last thing I would do is report them to the state, and that's a voluntary thing in Florida. But ethically, that becomes a challenge that sometimes we have to go that far.
Hey, thanks for that question, Marie. I think, Manny, we have additional question in queue.
Yes, we do. Our next question is from the line of Elisa Ben-Zakaria from New York, New York. Please go ahead.
Not a question, a comment. Thank you so much. It was a great review. My comment is that I think today our patients age over time, and I think even though the mini mental is not so specific in MS patients, it's important to remember that patients, when they get older, they might develop dementia. I had an experience recently of a patient, a very well-known lawyer in New York City, and I didn't think initially to do the mini mental, and just because you stick to those instruction, and you really sometimes need to think out of the box. And I did the mini mental, and I was so surprised. You got such a low score. So I think we have better treatment, and anyhow our patient really age with us. I guess I think it's important to pay attention to the specific tools, and sometimes consider the mini mental along with the other cognitive scales.
Eliza, I think that's a very good comment, and I would challenge persons to think about that not only with cognitive impairment but with all of the other things as we see our patients, again, being clear that we're advocating for their health maintenance, that we are looking at other health problems that also affect their cognition. Although I've said that this is very prevalent in persons with multiple sclerosis to have cognitive impairment, we still can't be blind to the fact that, yes, these persons have other problems, and so making sure that they are taking care of their health maintenance and other activities are extremely important. Yes, you know, looking at people with both eyes is the best for us.
That's a great point, Elisa. Thank you so much. The other thing I wanted to ask Patricia, if you could just comment on, is for patients coming in, and maybe other nurses out on the lines could also make some comments, is disability and that being an issue for patients, especially with regards to their work and cognition affecting that. Do you have any resources that you would recommend, or is there anything that you could speak to in your own practice in terms of for nurses out there who may be having patients coming in concerned that they're not able to continue with their employment because of cognitive deficits?
That's a very good one, Jen. I try to, when persons are concerned about that, that is one of the definite red flags to send them for neuropsychological testing. And simultaneously, I'm also giving them information from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society and help with case management for disability claims. In addition, there is a website, www.allsup.com, that is a service that will help persons go through the disability, and they take just a fraction, a percentage off the top, and they guarantee, they have a pretty good success rate as guaranteeing getting persons through that disability. And they do work throughout all of the states. I'm not sure if they would cover into Canada, but for disability claims in Canada, I'm not quite sure how that would work, but I know that they cover all 50 of the states here, and that's a very good resource for persons who need help gathering all that information and don't want it at the expense of a lawyer.
That's great. Thank you. The only one thing I just wanted to ask, if you would just clarify for our nurses out on the line who may not be working exclusively in MS and may not have familiarity, can you just explain briefly the mini mental that you were describing, you and Aliza had been talking about?
So a mini mental state exam goes through the first orientation, person, place, and time, very specific, month, day. Then we go through exactly place, city, state, country. We ask them to remember three words, say, repeat, remember those three words, spelling word, world forward or backwards, or counting backwards from 100 by 7, having them name objects, be able to draw diagonal lines, read and comprehend reading, being able to copy an object, and also being able to use basic grammar in a sentence. Those are the major components of a mini mental state exam. It's a 30-point exam. Each question, each aspect of the question that they get right counts for a point.
And so it's really kind of a global assessment of cognitive function and not terribly sensitive to one disease entity or another, correct?
Right, right.
Okay. Manny, do you want to go to the other questions in queue, please?
Certainly. Our next question is from the line of June Halper from Fairmont, New Jersey. Please go ahead.
June, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How's that? I had it on mute so I wouldn't make noise. I have to turn it off. Yeah, yeah. Congratulations, Patricia. I just want everybody on the line to know that this town hall meeting was Patricia's idea. She actually brought it up at the last consortium meeting at the roundtable, and we really took her seriously. And congratulations for both the wonderful idea and for your terrific presentation. One of the things that, you know, we're starting to see is that people are utilizing a lot of technology in all aspects of, you know, medical care. And one of the research studies that was presented at the consortium meeting was the use of computerized rehabilitation for cognition. Have you had any experience with it in Florida in terms of any of your patients undergoing rehab? I know it's not in general use, but I know sporadically throughout the country, people are trying it out.
Well, I know that our major hospital system here, Florida Hospital, does use it partially. Our neuropsychologist uses it, but also it's available on the resources I'm putting online. There are both MS ActiveSource and the Bayer on their websites have cognitive tools that persons can play games to help with that. But in addition to that, there's other websites that I post there too. There are a wide array of websites, from free websites that then stepping up where, if you're willing to pay for that information, that you can do training individually and set programs through the online type of thing. But I do know that more and more providers of cognitive rehabilitation are starting to use computerized skills in helping persons not only with testing and retesting and in groups and also in homework to help them keep the momentum going between visits.
There's also, I don't know if you know, Patricia or June, if you can speak to this at all, but there's a couple of websites. One is www.happyneuron.com and then fitbrains.com and games.aarp.org. But some of our colleagues have had a lot of success with Happy Neurons. I guess the patients rave about it.
Right.
And it only costs a little bit is what I understand.
Let's make sure we get that posted on the website tomorrow.
Yeah, sure will.
Right.
Yeah. Those are good. Those are good. I saw the one for AARP, but I tried that one out, and I didn't get too far, so maybe I must not have.
Yeah, we could be a little challenged ourselves, my dear.
That's right. Well, those of us who've taken the PACET probably can attest to
that. I will not ever take the PACET to get that.
So.
Well, congratulations again, Patricia. It's a wonderful, wonderful talk, and I'm so glad we're going to be archiving this because this is something very important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, June. I think we have one other question in queue, Manny.
Yes, and I would also like to remind everyone that it is star one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Amy Perrin-Ross from Chicago, Illinois. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jen and Trish.
Hi, Amy.
Trisha, thank you so much for a wonderful presentation. I really appreciated you starting off with a myth to help us get rid of some of those old ideas stagnating around in our brain before we ever even got into the meat of the presentation. I thought that was an extremely effective way to do it. I, like Aliza, don't really have a question but a comment, and that is that one of the things that we find, certainly in the state of Illinois and I imagine in other places, is that while we have a number of neuropsychologists in a big city like Chicago, one of our major challenges is that none of them accepts our Medicaid population. So we have no options for those people. But the other side of the comment is that when we as nurses start to talk to people, whether that's first visit or 15th visit or whenever it is, about cognitive issues, and I think as nurses we need to ask some very specific questions rather than just saying, how's your memory, in which the response is usually okay. You know, I ask them about things like, how are they doing at work? Are they having any trouble with technology? Kind of finding out what they do and what kinds of things might be impaired. If there's any hint of that, I do try to get a baseline neuropsych evaluation, simply because as time goes on, if their biggest problem is cognitive dysfunction, which it may be, I have a really difficult time getting disability for these folks unless I've got some sort of a baseline to compare to. And for those people that I can't get in for a baseline, again, I think it's incumbent upon us as nurses is to look at some of these tools that you mentioned, Patricia, and try to do a couple of them at least and have them documented in the patient's chart so that we would have something to go back to be able to measure change and make an easier case for disability down the line if that's what we need to do.
Oh, I agree. Very, very good comments, Amy, and thank you so much.
Amy, you are so good with getting information. I love the way you ask questions. It's really, you've taught me so much over the years. And I think you could have been a killer trial attorney. So thanks so much for your comment.
Sure.
And Manny, I wanted to ask if we have any additional questions in queue.
Yes. Our next question is from the line of Tanya Barcinas from Cary, North Carolina. Please go ahead.
Hi, sorry, I was getting off my mute. I do have a question. I'm a nurse educator with one of the drug companies educating patients on their interferon injections and going into their homes. So I'm in a different position, and often when I'm talking to my patients, you know, they may mention these types of things to me, and I do suggest to them talking to their doctors about the neuropsych testing, or I'll go back and, you know, tell the doctor that we had this conversation. But I'm thinking maybe proactively, maybe for those new patients that I see, would it be a good idea, or is there any like evidence-based studies that show maybe doing these type of games online or these cognition exercises will help prevent any cognition issues, maybe proactively doing it?
I think there is more information in the Alzheimer's studies looking at both physical and mental exercising does really sharpen and improve cognitive skills. And so there is data for that. And I tell persons that, yeah, this in neuro is more than ever. You either use it or you're going to lose it. If you don't use your mind and exercise that like every other muscle, it will become harder for you. And on top of normal aging and all of the other things and multiple sclerosis, you'll be losing neurons just because you're not using them. So I think that advocating getting persons to take active part in their own education and mental exercises is excellent. And I would hope that for any other persons, you know, that are out there, if you interact with our patients at all, then again, I really appreciate that you ask that they tell their healthcare provider about this. But as a provider going into their home, if you could in any way send a note back to us as to what you see, because that's often a mystery for us, what is actually occurring in their home. So that is wonderful if that information comes back to us, what you see, is their house organized, you know, the type of things that we're asking them about that they may not tell us about.
Right, and I think too, Trish, you know, you bring up a great point. And Tanya, you know, as being our kind of team members or teammates out in the home, you see if there's post-it notes everywhere or if they're forgetting their appointments with you. I mean, those are things I think that are big tip-offs. And as far as tools and such, I think there's been a lot of work done by Ralph Benedict out of SUNY Buffalo as well as Fred Foley. And we'll have Dr. Foley's references available on the website at www.ilmsn.org. Probably posted as soon as tomorrow, if not this evening, with the podcast.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And Manny, I want to turn it back to you. Is there any additional questions in queue?
Yes, our next question is from line of Lawyer Mayer from Austin, Texas. Please go ahead.
Hi, Trish. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
That was a great presentation tonight. Thank you. I do have a question for you. As far as MRI correlation, I don't know how much data we have out there. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, there is significant data looking at the correlates for the conventional MRI data. In fact, Champions was a huge help in looking at the 10-year study, looking at the correlation between PASAT testing and the T2 volume. In the Champion study, they were able to show a definite correlation between persons as their T2 lesions increased in volume over the 10 years, so did their PASAT test scores decrease in functional ability. And then there is more and more data being generated about gray matter disease in multiple sclerosis and the effects of the gray matter disease. And that is just proliferating now. And with Omar Khan, he did studies looking at brain atrophy on the 1.5 Tesla MRI, because those of us who may not have academic resources available, you know, we sometimes are using the 3 Tesla or the 1.5 Tesla. Omar Khan, when he looked at the long-term effects of brain atrophy, related that you know, definitely there was an improvement with long-term use of the interferon Avonex and glatiramerin compared to no treatment. And in fact, over 5 years, he thought that that was better than the high-dose interferon. Also in the AFFIRM study, there was data looking at Tysabri and the use of the PACET testing with that, and a 43% reduction in PACET testing on persons who were stable on Tysabri treatment.
So Trish, is this something I've kind of found it was very interesting, because when I'm talking to patients, cognition is usually such an important topic with them. As far as I think the most recent article, and I don't have it in front of me, on cognition was talking about possibly the transition from relapsing remitting to secondary progression as being a very critical time point in the progression of cognition. Not that it, I mean, it can happen at any time or even before there's any clinical other symptoms, but as far as talking to patients about that, I refer to that article, and forgive me because I don't have it in front of me, but usually I think that seems to hit home. You know, if we're gonna go on a disease modifying agent, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to slow down the progression of the disease. We're also trying to slow down the progression of the cognition with it.
Right, and I think the article you're referencing is from Lancet Neurology 2008, Gray Matter Pathology and Multiple Sclerosis. And really, in that article, in reviewing the gray matter disease, there was significant evidence for, as the gray matter lesions increase, persons do start moving out of that more remitting, relapsing into the more progressive forms. And also, the more gray matter disease, the more atrophy and the more cognitive impairment. So I believe that's the article I read that out of.
No, I think you're right. Thank you. I'm sorry that I didn't have it in front of me, but I just think it's an important topic that we talk to patients about. It is another reason for them to empower themselves by going on a disease-modifying agent.
Lizzie, in that vein, too, I'll just ask Lori while you're on the phone, either of you, what other things, as nurses, what are some of the nursing kind of practices that you guys recommend just that patients can do, you know, at home to help kind of, besides doing the brain games, are there other activities just, you know, in their home that they can do to help with kind of some remediation and things that we can suggest that they can empower themselves by doing?
Trish, did you want to?
Great. Well, I try to tell persons that, you know, a clean house is a better way to live, and so that they should be trying wherever possible to plan their activities, to organize them themselves, to try to have routines so that when things aren't changing so dramatically for them on a day-to-day basis, the better off that they are able to function. So persons, if they have a morning routine versus every morning doing something different, that's very helpful. I try to have them, before they go to bed the night before, make sure they've planned the outfit they're going to wear if they have to take lunch with them. So helping them with reminders and things like that. And I remind persons that in this busy day and age, everybody uses cell phones, uses PDAs, uses calendars, writes families' notes. So remind them that putting notes around the house, putting little reminders, are things that are not red flags for anybody who comes into their house like, oh my, this is a person that has some problem. And so I remind them to use those type of things. Oftentimes, persons, as they come into the office, haven't thought of that. And so before they leave, you have your phone on you, I'll pull their phone out, and we'll put reminders in their telephone for medications, different things that they need to remember through the day, because they've never used that part of their telephone. They've got a wonderful phone that they're taking pictures and things on, but they've never thought about the whole aspect of that phone. And I encourage them to allow persons to help them out. Oftentimes we feel like everything we have to do, everything, we've always been doing everything, and that's a sign of weakness. I ask them, please, family members want to help you. Let them help you. And then reminding them to take rest breaks, that they need to know that they're going to be strong when mentally, when they're physically strong.
Great. And Lori, do you have anything to add?
Yes, actually, I totally agree with everything that you said. Those are just really good strategies, healthy lifestyle, memory aids, you know, devices. But I think it's real important, too, that they think about the time management and their priority setting, you know, also is involved with that. And the last thing that you mentioned, which I thought was excellent, is help for organization. You know, sometimes I think all it needs is somebody to go in and help the patient get a little bit more organized in their life, just to make things a little bit easier.
Great. Lori, thank you so much. I just wanted to ask while we're waiting, I think we have time to take probably another question or two from the audience. And so I just wanted to ask Manny if we had any questions on the line.
I did want to once again remind everyone that it is star one if you'd like to ask a question.
Do we have any questions in queue at the moment?
At the moment, we do not.
Okay. So then I'll just kind of say one of the things that we're doing in our practice as well is we use a system called NeuroTrax as a screening, and that's something that you can get. It's a computer-based screening program that really is kind of a global assessment of the five areas that are affected in MS. And what we utilize it as is really kind of as a baseline for new patients. And then we may do it annually thereafter if patients aren't having significant issues. But obviously the golden tool would be neuropsychological testing if they are, in fact, complaining of issues or having problems. I always think of there was a patient that Connie Easterling, who Trish has worked with up in Orlando, told me that stuck with me. She had a 17-year-old patient that came in, and Trish, you probably know this patient and heard the story, but this patient was a pediatric patient and had older brothers. And really her parents, after her first issue when she was a child, didn't take her back to see a neurologist after the resolution of what they thought was kind of ADEM. And she showed up at Connie's office at 17 and physically really no deficits to speak of, but mentally, you know, was failing out of school miserably. And she said, you know, this patient, her largest problem was her cognitive dysfunction. And, you know, just to go along with the idea that Trish, you may want to expound on that, but, you know, that initial testing probably is a good idea from the get-go, because we do see it so often, even in CIS patients, they start to have some issues.
Oh, I agree, and I've heard Connie speak about that patient. In fact, I think I've seen that patient at a patient support group, and it is devastating when you see a patient like that, and really, again, getting an assessment of that person so that the assessment does a lot more than just, okay, you have cognitive impairment, but gives us strategies, specific strategies that we can look at to help this person vocationally, where this person's strengths and weaknesses are, and really aids in where we're going to make the referrals, and remembering that, again, taking care of an MS patient requires an army, and physical therapists, occupational therapists, having all of those persons help out with different components that will help, and that was extremely helpful for this particular girl.
Yeah. Manny, I want to just ask if do we have any additional questions?
Yes, we do. Our next question is from the line of Connie Easterling from Orlando, Florida. Just go ahead.
Connie.
Thanks. I just want to make a comment. Great job, Trish. You did a really great job. I'm so happy for you. Yes, I did have a 17-year-old patient, but my comment is about, I know Jenny used the NeuroTrax, and we've also used the NeuroTrax. We're not using that anymore because of the cost attached to it, mm-hmm. but was it just a practice decision? But what we're using now is the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, and it's a very sensitive tool, and it covers a number of domains. And so it takes about 10 minutes to administer, and so you can tack it onto a visit. We tend, I don't always do that, especially the first visit, because it can be a little bit overwhelming, but we tend to do a screening of every patient who comes into practice. It may not be the first visit, but subsequently we'll do it. And then if we identify any domain that there's a particular area, we may go on and do further testing. Or if there appears to be some significant issues, we'll refer them to neuropsych, like you suggested, Tricia. We really like the tool because it can be given so quickly, and it is quite sensitive. I think the tool is actually can be obtained on the Internet, the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, or the MOCHA, M-O-C-H-A, it's also called.
So. Is that proprietary? Is that something we could post with our podcast?
I don't think it's proprietary. I think it can be posted. I can do some research into that if you.
Yeah, if you don't mind, could you email me and
yeah,
we can post
sure.
it tomorrow?
Sure.
Because that would be
sure.
really helpful. It's nice to be able to have a tool to do.
Yeah, it's and we use it all the time. It's a great tool.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much,
You're
Connie.
Welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks, Connie. And Mandy, do we have any additional questions?
Yes, our next question is from Marina May from Cleveland, Ohio. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone, again. As we're talking, it occurred to me, you know, that we often tell patients to utilize some of these tools, and they often use them alone. And it's, I think it's really helpful if patients try to improve their memory and have somebody else with them or say these exercises aloud. Because if they're sitting there thinking in their own mind, you know, it may not be as helpful as if they're conversing with another person or sharing that game or that mental activity with another person. So if someone's doing a crossword puzzle or a Sudoku, if they say, oh, I'm going to put a 2 here or I'm going to put this word here, it may be a little additional stimulation for them to help along, because many of our patients, as we've talked about earlier, have problems with just the verbal piece of it, and that might be something that could help them too. Just a thought.
No, that's a great thought. Again, you know, expanding their social networks and having persons help out with them, and game night is a wonderful night in most households, and so having even the Wii game provides stimulation, and having to follow the directions is helpful. I find a lot of my patients describe that as being mentally stimulating as well as physically stimulating, although most of them are physical games.
Yeah, the other one, what about like a family Scrabble night or a family game night? I agree, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Marie, I think it's great to have the family participate.
Yeah.
And sometimes varying the games, because playing the same card game is not as beneficial as playing a different card game or different board game every week, playing something different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Lori just texted me and said, don't forget to tell them about Cash Cab. And great. Thanks, Marie. So... I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up. I just wanted to, on behalf of the IOMSN, I would like to thank Patricia for all of your work and your presentation. She did a really lovely PowerPoint that will be available tomorrow, as well as the podcast, again, on www.iomsn.org. I'd like to thank again Biogen IDEC for supporting these programs through their unrestricted educational grant, and also would like to just take a special opportunity to acknowledge Dr. Fred Foley's work, which we referenced multiple times this evening. And again, we will have those references up on the website tomorrow. I also would like to just also acknowledge Patricia and thank her for, for her the inception, really, of the town hall discussions. And again, just to acknowledge and attribute the fact that this was your original idea, and we've had a ball with it. So I just want to Remind everyone to remember to visit the website tomorrow for the summary, as well as a podcast of tonight's program. And we'll ask that you complete the post-town hall discussion survey so that we may continue to improve our programming to best suit your needs. We will be... there was a survey that went out to request if there was a better time that perhaps we could hold these town hall discussions. I can ask Lenny to resend that tomorrow, or if, in fact, that you think that there's a better time, feel free, you can email me at my email address, and I will forward all of your responses to Lenny. And my email address is Jenny, JennySmrTKA at yahoo.com. Again, I will forward any feedback to Lenny. And we hope that you join us again next month. We will be holding a town hall discussion where we'll be featuring Dr. Megan Barrett. She will be presenting How Can Rehabilitation Help in MS? That will be on Tuesday evening, August 16th. Again, we thank you so much for joining us this evening. This concludes tonight's meeting, and I hope you have a good evening.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.